Elul is a month-long holiday, or Halamonth, that marks the end of one Jewish year and helps to transition into the beginning of a new one. Traditionally, it is a month of introspection, contemplation, and personal growth. Untraditionally, or less traditionally, Elul Unbound is a digital initiative offering up a wide variety of avenues for experimenting over the course of this month. Sign up to join Elul Unbound's daily email list and learn more about all of Elul Unbound's offerings by heading to judaismunbound.com/ELUL. This is a special bonus edition of Judaism Unbound, prepping for the challah year. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Lex Rofberg.
And I'm Wendy Bernstein-Lash.
And we have an exciting announcement slash guest today. The announcement is the guest. The announcement is that we have a guest named Esty Solomon Gray who is joining us today. And she's similar to last week when we welcomed Dan as a guest. She's sort of half guest, half host, because she is one of the members of the team that both created Elul Unbound a couple of years ago and continues to help create this awesome thing. So Esty Solomon Gray, welcome back. It's great to have you.
It's wonderful to be here, Lex.
Yeah. And one niche, one role that Esty has helped to play as we've put together some of these mini podcasts over the years is that we turn to Esty when we want to have conversations about the flow of Jewish time in various ways. And it is a perfect thematic week to do a little bit of that, because this week, drum roll please, we are diving into a theme all about Shemitah, which is the sabbatical year, which is to say a year-long period of time. Now, you might be asking, what is that, Lex? Maybe I've heard that word Shemitah once or twice. Maybe I've heard it more, but I still don't really know what it is. And B, if you're real impressive, you might know that sabbatical year, that Shemitah year, it's not starting this Rosh Hashanah. It's still 1 year away. So like, why would you talk about it now? Why wouldn't you talk about it next year when it's actually starting? And that's part of our entire point. So before we go all the way down that path, I do want to say a little bit of what this sabbatical year actually is. So in the Torah, we have this conception that not only do human beings get a weekly Sabbath, not only do animals also get a weekly Sabbath where, you know, Jews are supposed to allow their animals to rest on Shabbat, plants and like the world get a rest too. And that's kind of a powerful statement. And the way that that manifests is through this thing called Shemitah, through this sabbatical year. And it's not that every single week you allow your land to rest, although you do because you're not doing agricultural work on Shabbat. But that wouldn't really serve much of a function, because the way that plant cycles work is much different than the way that human and animal cycles work. They need a year-long rest every once in a while. And so the way it works is, the way people tend to translate it is, every 7 years you let the land lie fallow. I never hear the word fallow in any other context other than this one, but you let the land lie fallow, which is to say you don't do all sorts of different kinds of agricultural work that you would normally do if you are an Israelite living your life according to the flows of agricultural time that are described in the Bible. So that's kind of what this thing is. There's also a big thing where every 7 sabbatical years, which is to say every 7 sevens, every 49 years or every 50 years, there's a big version of this called Jubilee, which is a whole other set of stuff that we're actually not going to go that into, but you can have a fun Google deep dive if you're interested. So that's a little bit of context laying. Esty, can you help us start to unpack why we would be connecting to this sabbatical year a year in advance, and how it might resonate for us, particularly in this moment that our world is facing?
When we first began reclaiming Elul for Elul Unbound, we were moved to do that because we felt, because Elul is an on-ramp to the high holidays, and without that on-ramp, all of us involved and many listeners since realized that the high holidays weren't really working. They weren't, we weren't fully available for the work to do in that 10-day period. And similarly, with this amazing technology, this time technology, this ancient wisdom that we've lost, which I call time technology, we need a whole year to get on-ramp to the great year of the Shemitah.
The challah year, you might say?
The challah year, exactly. And I always view time as this, the time that we live as sort of a flatline clock ticking thing. And then we have many, many other waves of time that we're living, the weekly, the daily, the Shabbat. And here suddenly we're remembering that we have a 7-year cycle, right? And 7 years is social time. 7 years is natural time. 7-year cycles are a whole different beast than the ones that we, especially modern progressive Jews, have tended to focus on, and that we've reclaimed thus far in reclaiming Elul. So reclaiming Shemitah, the time technology that we're now reincorporating into our lives, is a tremendous opportunity, particularly because of its emphasis, and Lex, you haven't mentioned this, yes, on social contracts. You not only leave the land fallow and take a bunch of individual activities, but slaves are let free. Deeds and contracts are rewritten at that 7-year and that 49-year time frame. So this next Shemitah year is the year of new contracting, new social contracting. And if there were ever a time for us to begin reformulating our contracts with each other and our society, then this actual moment, Elul 57, 80, 81, Justice Time 2020, 21. I don't know. It's like just in time, time technology. You gotta love it.
Yeah. So a couple things come up for me. And one is, I appreciate that you also brought in, it's not just about the land, Esty, but it's about releasing people from loans and releasing slaves. And considering the time that we're in now, and we're looking at all of the ways that we need to readjust our communities and our institutions to honor past wrongs, Shemitah fits so perfectly into that. I did want to mention that as a spiritual director, I do use the term fallow. And I wanted to say that because to me, that's what Shabbat embodies, is fallow time. And I have needed fallow months longer than months. Maybe I've needed fallow years. And to give permission to see what's emerging. And I think that is also a huge piece of Shemitah. It's like, we don't change overnight. The world doesn't, well, bad things like pandemics and whatever do cause shifts overnight. But when we're really trying to restructure our societies and find a new way of being, that does take time, and we have to give it that time. And so we have a whole year, if we take it, to then be ready for what's this new growth that's coming out, and how are we going to put up new scaffoldings and take down the old ones?
Yeah, well, I feel like there's a non-trivial way, and I hope it doesn't come off as a stretch. I don't think this is a stretch, but I think there's a way in which Elul and the sixth year in the Shemitah cycle, which is to say the year we're starting, which is the year before Shemitah, I think there's a way in which they parallel each other. And I'll make the argument, like, Elul, first off, is the sixth month. So sixth month paralleling the sixth year before a big seven is clearly a parallel. So the seventh month is when Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur happen, even though we think of it as the beginning of the year. It's the seventh in the Torah. And the seventh year is the Shemitah year. So in both cases, when you dive into the text that talk about the laws of the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year, right on the first pages, it actually doesn't say, on the seventh year, you do X, Y, Z. It says, in the sixth year, you have to prep in all these ways. I'm not being, you know, meditative, Eluli, contemporary Lex. Like, this is actually how that book starts. You can look at the Mishnah on Shvi'it, which means seventh. It's talking about the seventh year. Right at the beginning, it's like, here's all this stuff that you can do in the sixth year. And at a certain point in the sixth year, you actually have to stop some of those things, because if you didn't, it could encroach on the seventh year. All of this stuff. But it's clear that when you care about the seventh year, when you care about the conception of rest in the seventh year, there's a way in which you have to be considering that long beforehand. Natty Pessow came onto our show recently, and he argued that when you have a sabbatical year, it's not only the year before, like all, for all 6 years before, you have to consider in your mind, oh, there's going to be a year down the line where I can't do a bunch of stuff. So I have to keep that in mind. It flashes to that Joseph story where like they have to prep for the years of famine that come because they have to store aside all the food because they know there's going to be years of famine. And so they store extra stuff. Like there's a way in which that has to happen if you're going to buy into this sabbatical year. But basically, Elul is the sixth month, and it's before a big turning point. And the sixth year is a big year of preparation that comes before the seventh. I also would argue, by the way, that the 12th month, which is to say Adar, which comes at the beginning of the calendar year of secular time, it comes, you know, February-ish, that also is kind of like it's a lead-in. It's like prepping you for Passover, which is the first month of Nisan. There's a way in which this 6 and this 12 seem to be serving a role of prep before we get to the turning of the page. We need time. If we need a month to prep for 10 days of the high holidays, if we need all of Elul to do that, we clearly need at least a year to prep for a full year of Shemitah if it's going to mean anything. And I want it to mean something. I'll be honest. I sort of was aware of the most recent one 6 years ago, but I didn't really incorporate it into my life in a deep way or into my communities that I'm a part of because I didn't start thinking about it till like a month before. So we should do that this time, you know?
What I love about Shemitah and the concepts of it, though I never managed to reflect it in my life until this on-ramp year and next year, is that it's about processes that we as humans have something to do with. We have roles to play in them, but it's not, these are not things that happen in human time. They happen in field time, right? Laying your fields fallow. They happen in changing the systemic institutions of your society, which happen in, let's say, 7-year cycles or 50-year cycles. And they require a lot of work, right? I think for every, both on the pandemic side and the social side and all the other aspects of this moment that we're in right now, a lesson for us all since Pesach has been how deep and how lengthy these aspects of our world are, how slowly they move, how deeply they're structured. And Shemitah is the time that says, you as human can't just legislate that this is going to be different, that the world is going to be renewed, but you have great responsibility to take action every 7 years on these topics that are very long timelines.
You know, I think what comes up for me too is the sense, and we see this over and over in Judaism, that the quality of giving space for and time for is so important and so honored that, you know, we're kind of designed that we give on-ramps or funnels, as I like to think about it, is, you know, it's really hard to conceptualize something that is out in the future a year or 7 years. So you just start in, and as you get closer and closer, it gets more and more intense. But if you don't start with that initial process and you're there and you haven't done the work, so Elul gets us there in the high holidays, and the sixth year, the pre-Shemitah year, gets us there to really honor that year of what do you need to do if you're going to have a fallow year? If you're going to, what do you need to do so that you can actually have it? It's like all the prep you have to do before you go on a vacation.
I'm remembering something that I mentioned either in Elul in past years or just on the main podcast, but when we were in band class growing up, when I was in my concert band in high school and we would have class, I remember vividly that on multiple occasions, our band director had us practice the rests. Like the rests in the music, like the parts where you're not playing anything. So like, what does that even mean to practice the rests, right? Like we would like play a little bit beforehand. And then the whole point was to really practice that moment where we cut off and where we're not playing anything for a second. And so we have to, we're not doing anything when we're letting the land lie fallow. We're doing an activity, which is namely rest, which is, you know, a set of knots, but it's also an active thing that we are doing. So that was a thought I had. The only other thing, and then I'm going to pass to Esty to close us out, is that the ways you're talking about, Esty, how this is a moment to sort of reconsider our world in pandemic, in with respect to issues of racial injustice, like, I also would argue that it's embedded linguistically in the words that we're talking about. So the word for Shemitah is Shemitah in Hebrew, but the other word is Shvi'it, which means seventh. And the root, the word for seven is the same word as the word for oath. The same root is at play in both. When you make a deep agreement with someone, when you make a kind of sacred oath in the Bible, the word is hishava. It's a kind of contract in the way that you're talking about how we need to recontract our world. We have to redefine the parameters of our society. And that's sort of what this seventh year does. We should really take seriously that this seventh year is a year of sacred, I don't know, contract drawing, like obligation marking. We got to take, like, we have responsibilities here that are serious, and we would be wise to think about what kind of contract we want to draw up for this world, because the ones we've had in the past aren't doing it.
You know, even the Shabbat, the other seven that we're so familiar with, and the seven candelabra, the Shabbat in some sense is an oath. We keep the Shabbat, else it doesn't exist. Keeping the Shabbat is a contract not only with yourself, but with people around you. We have an oath to time. We've contracted with time itself to do all the work that we need to do, not just resting, but recontracting, re-agreeing amongst ourselves and inside ourselves with how we will live in this world. And this is the perfect opportunity, the crying need to remake those oaths.
I realized in you saying that we literally have a precedent where this seventh year is a moment to reconsider the Jewish boundaries and rules that we've drawn up, which is it's called the prose bull. There was a problem that arose in the sabbatical year, which you both talked about earlier. You called me on missing this. I mentioned the agricultural stuff. I didn't mention how debts are canceled. And there was an issue that was coming up because the sixth year would come, right? We were just talking about this. And so the sixth year comes and everybody's thinking about the seventh, and people would try to get a loan from somebody, and their friends wouldn't give them one because they knew the loan was about to be canceled in the seventh year. And so there was this thing, this prose bull, Hillel the Elder is associated with it, created. There was this, so I don't know the right word. There was basically a loophole, but like there was a mechanism created so that we wouldn't allow this reset button to mess with the fabric of our society, so that people in need of loans, people in need of help, would still be able to get that help. So clearly, we don't have to think of ourselves as like super new and talented as creative innovators today. Like, we can look to this moment that existed a couple thousand years ago where we said, hey, this moment is one where we absolutely have to hold those who are in need in our society and think about how this mechanism can most help them and how to make sure that it doesn't just lead folks to say, oh, sorry, not going to help you right now, because this year's coming up. So, wow, we've packed a lot in. Thank you, Esty, for joining us. Thank you, Wendy, always for being on all of these. But thanks to both of you for a really great final mini podcast of this year's LL Unbound.
May we have many more.
And thanks so much to all of you out there for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we hope that you'll tune in again in the future. We also hope that you'll head to our LL Unbound website. You might be getting the emails every day, but even if you have been, we've got our LL website that fills in the gaps for any emails you missed. And tell your friends about it, all that good stuff. It's at judaismunbound.com/Elul2020. That's E-L-U-L 2020. And we hope to check it out. There's a lot of fascinating stuff on there that we've found from other areas of the internet, and also some of our own content that we've created. So we hope that adds to your remaining experience of the month of Elul. We're going to close this episode out by just asking you to be in touch with us. We really love hearing from you. Let us know how these podcasts resonated, how they landed, if there were things you wish that we said that we didn't, that we could bring in next year. Be in touch with us at elul@judaismunbound.com. We really appreciate notes sent there. And that's it. We hope that these four episodes have gotten your mind and heart rolling a little bit as we head into Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Have an amazing new year, Shana Tova. And with that, this has been Judaism Unbound.